What's up, everybody? Welcome back to This Weird House. I am Nick Bodick. I am Nick, having 3 weeks behind on a haircut, Nick Bodick, this time around. And I am here with a guy I have known for years and who played no small part in my own popularity on No Sleep, the legendary Mr. Creepypasta. How are you, sir?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing good. My morning's just started, so you've caught me at the freshest I could possibly
be. That's perfect. Hopefully we'll catch you off guard and get some exclusives from you.
Oh God. Oh no.
No, man. Like, it's crazy. Like, I was thinking about it earlier today. I've known you for like a long time. I mean, you know, known you. Like, we've had pretty much just a business relationship, but like, you've always been such a good friend to like the horror community, man, especially like No Sleep. And fucking,
oh yeah,
you played a big part in a lot of people's like writing careers, man. It's awesome.
I would say you've known me. Like, you're on my Facebook, so you see all my personal stuff too. You don't just
that
see
is true. That is true. YouTube things. Yeah, for sure. Hell yeah, man. But I just kind of wanted to, like I was saying before, I just want to go into like you as a you and horror. So, what made you get into? Give me like the history of Mr. Creepypasta. Where did you start, and how did you evolve to the monolith that Mr. Creepypasta is now?
Okay. Well. So I've been doing this about 13 years. I think I started doing this when I was in college. Yeah, I started doing this when I was in college. And really, it was... So I was working at, like, AT&T at the time. And the job really sucks. Like, let me tell you. Like, so I was doing, like, over-the-phone technical support. And that job really, really sucks. Because, like, if anybody's done, like, call center jobs, like, you know, like, it's a really high turnover rate. It's a shitty job. But, like, the job I was doing in particular, because it was tech support, it's a job where like everything that goes wrong becomes your fault. So it's like, it's a really kind of bad thing. So in between calls, like, you always try to find like a way to like chill a bit, and you get 2 minutes. That's it. So it became kind of my thing, is like searching over, I think I was at the time I was using like X on 4chan and like reading over scary stories on the paranormal forum. And then after that, like, I think people there posted, like, the Creepypasta website, creepypasta.com. And then I started reading stuff there. So I started doing those, like, just kind of just at work. And I really liked it. And at the time, the Creepypasta website was being sold off for something. Like, the domain name was being sold. And a lot of authors there and in the forum they had at the time, we're commenting about how like, oh, well, it's over. It's finished. Everything's going to die. It's like, it's going to be bought out by some kind of random domain that's going to like dismantle the whole site. So I was like, well, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to start doing recordings of these stories and like kind of preserve them.
Oh, okay.
Like as these audiobook things. So I started doing that on YouTube. And it was really bad. I think like at the time I was like, me and my girlfriend, my college girlfriend were like, splitting, and I was like, yeah, this is a fun thing, you like horror too, like we can do this together. And she like listens to it and she goes like, this is really bad. you need to stop doing this. And I was like, oh shit, okay. But like I come back to it after a couple of months and like people are listening, people are like, oh, where'd he go, oh, he wanted to do more. So I was like, well, okay, I guess I'll just start doing more. So I just start randomly like recording new stories every so often when I get off work, because like I would work till I think I get home at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and then I'd be like, well, I'm just gonna do stories now until like 6 a.m. then I have to go to bed, and then I get up at 1 p.m. the next day to go back to work. And like I just started getting into that cycle of doing it, and I don't know how, at some point, like I was out of college, and I get contacted by a multi-channel network that was like, hey, we want to sign you up, and like, don't, like, as anybody starting on YouTube, like, just like as advice to anybody else, don't just immediately sign up with the first multi-channel network that contacts you, like, period. Don't make my mistakes. Yeah, they messaged me and they're like, hey, like, we want to sign you up, you can make money doing this. And then like they like send me this contract, and in the contract it gives an estimated number of what you can do with it. And it's not realistic. It's not realistic at all. But like, you know, I'm fresh out of college and I just see a number and I'm like,
of course,
yo, this could be my job. And my parents didn't like it. But like, yeah, my dad was like, maybe don't. But I took it. I quit my job, and I dedicated myself to doing YouTube. And I mean, with a shit ton of luck, it worked out for me. I was able to do that as my job. And in doing so, like, I don't know, I met like really great guys like you. I met like all these people in the horror community. When it comes down to writers, it comes down to audience, it comes down to other content creators on YouTube. I met like this really great community of people. They really kind of like helped me grow my channel, helped me grow myself. And like, dude, like, I don't know. It was like this magic that kind of like takes over from what it was from like, because I never was into horror until I was in college.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, I was going to ask sudden, you that, yeah, if you were like a lifelong fan or.
No, I've always wanted to be into horror. My mom is from Taiwan. So she has a very, what word I'm looking for here? A very strict, I guess. It's just a very interesting view when it comes down to horror and spirituality, mm-hmm. when it comes to that kind of thing. So she doesn't like. She doesn't like anything that even has a shiny knife in it. So she was like, no, no horror. No horror stuff. I don't want any horror on the TVs. So I didn't start watching horror movies till I left for college. And then I was like, you know, I'm going to pick up a horror movie. I'm going to watch The Grudge. I'm going to watch The Ring. I'm going to watch Friday the 13th.
You had 18
watch
years of catching up to do.
Yeah.
Man, that's crazy. And like, how does she feel about what you do now? Like what you've been doing for the last 13 years?
I mean, she's my mom, so like she for supports sure. me, and she's happy that I'm happy. And anytime I have stuff, like I think she came to my tour we did in 2019, and she was in the audience, so she sat and watched me perform, and she bought a T-shirt and a poster. She didn't have to do it because she knows I'm going to give it to her, but she bought these things. And then she put them into a drawer so she doesn't have to look at them because she thinks they're scary. But she bought them and she keeps them in the house inside of a drawer.
That's adorable, dude. Like that is like top tier mom shit right there.
I think the only thing that she bought that she like actually displays in my stuff is she bought the little stuffed animal.
Oh, no.
She's like, this is yeah. I'll keep the stuffed
That's
animal.
That's safe enough to have out.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Like it's the same with my mom, my grandma. My book came out, Daughter's Drawings. Buy it. It's on Amazon right now. It's part of the Indie Horror Bro. like they both bought the ebook, the paperback, and the hardcover. And I'm like, I have like a million copies set aside just for you guys.
Yeah.
And like, no, we wanted to pay for it. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. I was probably gonna ask you for money soon anyway, so that works out.
But here's the thing, have they read it?
My mom has, my grandma has a TBR pile taller than the house, and like she was straight up with me. She was like, I don't switch around, like I have the order that I got these books that I'm gonna read them in, and I like, you're not special, Nick, like
that's
I'm like, yeah, it's fine, I'm not, like that's my it. Book is probably the worst one out of the pile, so like I get it.
Wow. No, I was saying, like, your family's super supportive of the horror writing, then. They're also
yeah,
in the horror,
I mean,
like you are.
Like, but they definitely had their reservations when I started, but I think, like, obviously, like, with you, too. But I think that once they saw that I actually was starting to, like, pick up some steam, and then once I actually did start making money from it, they were like, oh, okay, so this... Yeah. And I think the fact that, because, I mean, so, like, not to get into a whole thing, but, like, I have bipolar, and the way my bipolar manifests is that I get, like... I guess they call it delusions of grandeur. So like I would start stuff and be like, oh, okay, I'm going to buy this $210 tattoo machine. I'm going to be the world's next great tattoo artist, despite having no artistic ability whatsoever. And like, it's like shit like that. So like, I imagine they never said this, but like, I imagine that when I started like writing horror, they're like, okay, this is just another thing he's going to do. And I know I had unrealistic expectations at first. Like when I started, I was like, all right, I'm going to start, like, this will be my job. And like, I was like, I had like one popular story on No Sleep, and I was like, all right, foot's in the door. I'm going to just take over now. And obviously that didn't have, I mean, I guess it kind of happened with No Sleep. I was the man around there for a minute.
You became really pop. Yeah.
but like No Sleep popularity equals $0 in money. So, you know,
I don't know. I've heard tell of quite a few different film studios that come through and buying options.
I mean, okay, so yeah, for, you're right. I don't want to take away from the people who did that. I guess I should say, like, no sleep doesn't equal sales, I should
say. Yeah, that's
and amazing. There have been, like, film options, but you will notice. And I guess after the option, it's kind of out of the writer's hand and it doesn't matter. They already got paid, but, like, none of those movies have ever been made.
That's,
which sucks. I would love to see them.
I don't know, like, if I could talk about that, get too much into that, but yeah, that's a heartbreaking thing. That's like, always feels like, you know, because you feel so good, you know, you wrote something and get so much attention, mm-hmm. and then like oh, film studio wants to make it into a movie, and then they just basically take it away from you for 10 years.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, you can't do anything with it, and like, you're just waiting. Like, well, you guys were interested, and like, oh yeah,
and.
Please, dude, like, yeah. Do something.
Right, yeah, and like, for me, like, I don't know if anybody really knows this, but like, Daughter's Drawings, the story itself was actually optioned back in like 2017. Oh. I sold it for like three grand something like that, very small studio, and the rights were only they only had the rights for 2 years, and like, it was, I had someone else read the contract who knows contracts, and they were like, okay, this means that if they don't do anything with it by this time, then it goes back to you. So I was like, okay, cool. And I did that. Luckily, I did that, not one of the bigger ones, because then I wouldn't have my book now, obviously. But yeah, like, it's, and I, as you can see, nothing happened with it. Like, once they had the options, that was it. And now that the story is popular again, I actually have had a couple of people reach out. Nothing concrete yet or anything. I still have all the rights. Yeah. Anybody who wants them, let me know. but yeah, man. Yeah, I'm not trying to take anything away from the people who have sold stuff. Like, it's awesome that they have. Like, I mean, I'm always supportive of other authors, especially like from No Sleep. But every time someone does something, I'm like, God damn it, that should have been me. Like, there's that little part of, I'm only human.
No, yeah. That, yeah, yeah, exactly. You have that little bit of greed in your
for room. Sure, like, oh. For sure. That jealousy. And like, yeah. But then at the end of the day, I'm like, nah, man, like, a win for him or her is a win for all of us. Because, I feel bad saying this. I have kind of been on the anti-no sleep wagon for a few years now.
Really? Yeah.
Like,
is it the rules changes? I'm
yeah,
assuming?
That's like, why. It's like... Yeah.
A lot of people eventually come and go based off of, like, the rules, decisions, moderation.
Yeah, and I don't want to sound too much like a back in my day, like, but, like, yeah. I really feel like we were the golden age. Like, when it was, like, not to toot my own horn again, but, like, when I was around, it was, like, C.K. Yeah. Walker, Felix Blackwell, better do it by stories. Pen Pal, Romantic Cabin Getaway, Baraska, like... All the heavy hitters came out in that like 3 year period from like 2014 to 2018 ish. And that's not to say that there's not, I mean, there's still great stories being posted today. But yeah, as a writer myself, like they started like it just got narrower and narrower as the years went on. And it's once they started trying to define horror, that was like the last straw for me. That pissed me off.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. And, like, there's a lot of authors that I talk to now that talk about, like... I'll say, like, when it comes down to it, like, scouting on No Sleep for stories, like, just for, like, MCP stuff, I will hand off to, like, other people a lot of the time. And it becomes more and more difficult. I rely more now on my relationships with existing authors... and buying stories from them directly than I do scouting stories on No Sleep and trying to find new authors, which is kind of sad because, like, I want to find new authors.
Right.
At the end of the day, like, I've said, like, after maybe the first 3 years or 4 years when I tried to find out what the channel really was, I think that was where I kind of defined, like, I think this channel could be a platform for unpublished or self-published authors. That's really what I wanted it to be. Because, like, it has a platform of a young audience that want to be into horror. And giving them new avenues to be able to do so is, like I can be able to help other people to do that.
That's awesome.
And I like being able to do that, but, like, it, I guess... because of the way that No Sleep's structured, it doesn't like encourage new people as much as it does encourage a specific format. So off of that, like, yeah, there's some really great people out there. I still find new authors that I work with, but it's few and far between now compared to what it was, say, 5 years ago.
Right, you had your pick of the litter back in the day.
Well, yeah, because everybody was posting new horror. I mean, like, it creates its own problems also, which means, like, back then, yeah, I'd find a lot more people because everybody's posting different ideas from all over, but it also dilutes it a lot more because there's just a lot more to just crap.
For sure.
You know, like, there's a 150-word post that's just on there that, like, oh, I got attacked by the poop man. And, like, you know, like, well, there's no moderation to that. So, like, poop man is perfectly acceptable. But, like, now, poop man's not allowed. So I'm not, like, my scout to me, I'm not going to run into poop man stories. Yeah. But I also don't run into it if it turned out somebody wanted to write poop man and it's, like, actually, like, a really funny comedy horror story. Yeah. And it could have been something that, like, the audience ate up because it was like, that's a hilarious thing. And he actually has good concepts when it comes down to writing horror. I would never see it because, like, it's not allowed to show up anymore.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, remember I said I have unpopular opinions about horror. I would, the people who do the scout for me, my scout usually does know that I have unpopular opinions. So if they saw, like, a story, then they're like, poop man, they'd be like, yeah, I'll send it to him. I'm just going to see what he says. And, like, because, like, they know I'll be like, oh, that's funny. I'll do it. Like, I will. My unpopular opinion is that, like, horror doesn't have to be scary all the time. And I think that horror does better when it's not scary all the time. Also, like, I love bad horror so much. Yeah, I think horror does better if it's not scary all the time. If you write a tense story that's consistently tension, then the exhaustion comes out. Like, eventually I want the payoff to be now. If I give you, like, snippets of, like, funny in the little bits of the story, that tension goes away. And then when the horror hits you again, like, oh man, I wasn't expecting that to happen. I was just laughing about that guy. Why did he get disemboweled in front of me? You know, that's the thing. I really like that. Also, I just love bad horror. And things are like cornball,
like shitty No Sleep.
Shit up, dude. Yeah, dude, I eat up it's shitty so No funny, Sleep sometimes. Dude. Okay, I love it.
It's funny for sure. But no, you know, I actually don't totally disagree with you. Really, there's definitely in writing. It's definitely you have to find a balance because you're right. Like if it's constantly, there needs to be like a way down, I guess. Like you need to be down here so you can get to up here. If you're always up here, then like if the entire thing is tense and none of it's tense kind of thing.
That's
sort
yeah,
of
exactly.
I don't know. I don't feel like I'm explaining it very well. But like yeah, no, I get what you mean. Like I learned a lot about that actually from Felix who wrote Romantic Cabin Getaway, Stolen Tongues.
Yeah. It's such a good story.
Oh, dude, that's such, it's still
like,
my favorite.
I feel like not enough people like pick up on that story. I think that was such.
It's still my favorite No Sleep story of all time. Like that one that really changed the game for me, dude. Like that and Pen Pal, which Pen Pal is everybody's favorites for good reason. Yeah. Dathan is the man.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Felix helped me tremendously. A huge help on Daughter's Drawings. He like wrote this whole like basically an essay for me on like how to like structure a novel, and that was a section of it that was like make sure you have like kind of periods for the reader to kind of cool down, because then when you get back into it you can really hit them hard and it's going to hit that much harder. And I was like, that was good advice. And I've actually gotten comments on Daughter's Drawings about that, how the like kind of the false sense of security. And so I'm like, all right, well, I guess Felix knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Speaking of, you know, comedy, horror in general, like subgenres, do you have certain, I guess you may have just answered this, like certain types of stories you like narrating more than others, like for like a specific reason? Like I like doing this kind of story because I can do this while I'm narrating sort of thing.
Not really. Like, I mean, like, I like any story that lets me play around with characters. I think that's why, like, Tales from the Gas Station, Jack Townsend, I like doing his stories a lot because he lets me have a lot of freedom when it comes down to the characters that I do. I think there's only been maybe two times he's ever been like, don't do a character like that. I was like, okay. And also because it's comedy, I get to like mess around with like what I want the character to be. Like the egg-shaped woman, I think, was the most wild character he gave me, like, in the first book. Because, like, I just did Raz from Monsters, Inc., and he was like, that's good. I'm like, okay, I'm in, yeah.
That's awesome.
Like, I want to do that. And, like, he let me do, like, Larry the Cable Guy for a couple of characters and things. Like, those are like, the most fun ones that I get to do. But, like, when it comes to, like, subgenres for horror, like, I enjoy doing, like, dark humor stories. I think Tales, like Jack Townsend gets that one. Vincent Venicava, he gets those a lot too. Like some really good ones. Like Vincent's already given me like one of his latest books, which I don't know if I could talk about, but I will because like I want people to be hyped about his book. He has a book called Gas Station Dick Pills coming out, and
that's awesome.
It is exactly what it sounds like. Yeah, like rules. A guy takes gas station dick pills, and then like. His dick becomes a monster. So like I kind of hype about it.
That non-ironically, yeah, like, sounds good. Like that, there's a good concept there for sure.
There's like a cornball level to it that like I do like, but like other genres and stuff I come and go. Like things that I'm into at the time will make me like I want to do some more like this. Yeah. I think Dale Drake is a writer I work with a lot. I don't think he's ever posted to No Sleep, but he's Dale, he's really good at like just feeling out what I'm feeling at the time, because I know like he's writing a lot of different stories, series is on the channel right now, but one of them is like City of Midnight, and I was like, I just want to do something that's a little bit cyberpunky, and he's like, cool, so he sends me like City of Midnight, and now it's like the cyberpunk vampire story that he's doing, and like I always want to do sci-fi, and he's like, cool, and he sends me Eurydice, which is like this xenomorph aliens kind of story that's really cool. So he has a really good way of just feeling whatever I'm into at the time, which I like. I don't know, I've kind of like said most people I work with just kind of like learn who I am as a person, and then they're like, okay, cool, I'm just gonna feel out whatever you're doing right now, and I'm just gonna give you something that's based on that.
For sure. Hell yeah, dude. Like it's, I mean, you're one of, I've let people translate my stories over the last few years. Cause I mean, obviously I haven't posted No Sleep. It's been years since I posted over there. But I still get messages from people all the time asking if they can narrate like the story from like 2018 or whatever. And the only ones I let do it are, people who want to translate it to another language, just cause it looks good on a resume to be like, my work has been translated into like 19 languages, which I think I've actually crossed 20 at this point. Like I've had like my shit in like things, man. Like it's just like, it's ultimately meaningless really, but like my shit is in like Romanian and like,
Cool.
Right. It just sounds cool. And I like shit that sounds cool. But you, like you're one of maybe three people in the last 5 years to narrate a story of mine.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Back in the day, it was, you know, free for all. If somebody wanted it, they can have it. But, and then, I mean, there was that whole, like the No Sleep Blackout. Do you remember when that happened?
Yeah, I remember.
And like
the
Watchdogs. I don't know if those guys are still doing their thing or not, but like, I don't know about that one, but I know about it. Yeah. Like for the people who don't know what I'm talking about, like the, there was a huge problem with like content theft in the No Sleep world. And you obviously were never a part of that. But there were a few like big name, I'm not going to say anybody, but like big name narrators that like, who were just straight up taking people's shit and claiming credit for it, which was crazy. Like, and I was, for coincidentally, the fact that we're talking now, like, for the past like 3 weeks or so, I usually listen to audiobooks while I'm at work, but I couldn't find one. So I started listening to like classic creepypasta narrations. And of course you were in there, but like there were so many I saw that are just the title of the story and then by and the name of the narrator. And I'm like, no, I know who wrote this story. What? And it's not this person. And it's people who aren't around anymore. And like, they haven't posted new videos in a few years, and I assume that's why. But I'm just like, damn, dude, like it really used to be just like the Wild West like that. People would just take all sorts of shit. And
Well, that was like also that thing, like Brian mentioned back in creepypasta.com, right? That was back when authors never really signed their names on stories. Back on 4chan, the paranormal forum, there was an anonymous board, so you couldn't put your name on things. It was the whole point of it was like everything's anonymous. So like when I got started, that was like one of those things. Like I always put links back to the original stories because like I felt like it was, you know, if I'm doing. The way I viewed what I was doing was like doing a radio show or doing an audiobook or something like that. So I always put like authors' names on there. I put links back to the original stories. But like, I know there was quite a bit that got started after I did.
Yeah.
That didn't. Like, I think like the formatting of it just always became like what YouTubers eventually became, which is like using it like a video game where I just put down like, this is the name of the game I'm playing and that's it. Like, I wouldn't put down, you know, like, I'm playing Mario Party by Nintendo.
You're right.
So people would just assume that, like, that's the way it's going to go. But this is a different kind of media that we're creating. And I think, especially when, like, so many people got into it, they were, like, younger. Like, teenagers starting to be able to do that. They didn't know what they were going to do. Like, hell, like, when I got started, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Yeah. You know, like, I don't know what the rules are. There wasn't really a rule set. There was no real precedent for how this is going to go. So it got out of hand to the point where, it kind of just exploded. And that's what ended up happening with the blackout. I think now, there's a lot more, regulation with how it takes with like how things are done, how things take place. But I'll tell you one thing. I usually make a whole lot about, like, my content is, like, free for anybody to use. So if you want to, like, do animations over it, you can do animations over it. If you want to use it for, like, play it over gameplay, play it on stream, go ahead and play whatever you want to do. Just make sure that you, like, use the original story links and stuff like that off of my stuff. I always make all that free. With, like, TikTok right now, Instagram Reels, I get a lot of stuff tagging me that's just, like, they just rip the video and they just put it up in chunks onto TikTok and they put it up in chunks on Instagram. And like they just like I because like I'm not gonna go back at what I said. Like, you want to use my stuff, you just use my audio. Yeah. I don't care. But like I just see like this is just gonna happen again, man. This is what's gonna happen on Instagram. It's gonna happen with the AI voices and things like that. People using those, it's just turning into the same thing. Like, people wanting to make content farms out of those and using AI voices, it's just gonna happen again. People stealing content, and it's unfortunate, but like, as that's just what's going to take place. Like, regulations need to go in over these new platforms and stuff, and we'll just that's gonna be one of those things. Like, we'll just see what happens.
It got kind of, I don't want to say it got under control with, you know, narrators and no sleep, but it improved quite a bit. Like, the message was relayed, I think, effectively. There's always going to be people who will still, who just won't know and will go there and be like, oh, cool, these stories are posted for free. I can post it too and make money from it. And like, I've only met a few people who, not met, but like interacted with a few people who, when I tell them like, no, that's not how it works, they're just like, well, fuck you. Like, I'm going to use your, dude, like some bold what motherfucker, dude. Like, I'm just like, all right, well, I'm just going to wait for two more people for you to post a story about two more people, and we're going to shut your shit down. Yeah, man, pretty bold, God. But generally speaking, when I explain it to people, they're like, oh my God, I didn't know. Sorry. What really pisses me off is when it's like, not even narrators. And I'm not real up to date on like who the big YouTubers are now, but one for me was with the original Daughter's Drawing short story. Actually, a very popular YouTuber with at the time, she had like 20 million followers or subscribers or something, just massively popular. All of her videos got well over a million views. She used Daughter's Drawings, and I messaged her and was like, or I hit her with a DMCA, and she got back to me like immediate, because I tried messaging her originally and didn't hear back, hit her with that, messaged me back literally within 10 minutes of me hitting her with the DMCA. I'm like, all right, that's kind of grimy. But, and then, you know, she offered me a payout. I was like, okay, that works for me. Like, it was, I felt for how popular the video had gotten. And I hate it when people say like, oh, but think about the exposure. Like, you can't pay bills with exposure. Yeah. But I will say that, like, I did benefit from it because it was, like, such an enormous amount of exposure. Like, it did drive traffic to my website, which did bump up my ads and stuff. But, I mean, at the end of the day, she had still used my story without permission. And she knew that. And she was like, oh, my God, I'm really sorry. I thought because it was on No Sleep, it was da-da-da-da-da, whatever. She ended up paying me. Mm-hmm. And so I removed the strike. And then fucking, like, literally 2 days later, 3 days later, whatever it was, she posted another person, like, a friend of mine, an author, no permission, like, new video that, like, so it's like, okay, so she definitely knew, and she just has enough money to just, like, eat the strikes or whatever and just pay out and keep, and I'm like, dude, like, if, lady, if you were to just ask these authors, most of the time, they're going to be like, yeah, sure, that's cool. And most of the time, they won't ask for any money. Like,
I mean, like, this is one of those times also. It could have been, like, not to try to justify what she does. Because clearly, you know, it's not okay to, like, more than likely what she did is, like, went through, like, four or five things in one recording session. And they just all go to editing. And they just roll out as things go. So more than like, I would assume, like, she didn't do that multiple times afterward. Then, like, it's probably one of those things, like, she made the mistake one time, but she'd made it all in, like, one session.
Okay, yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, she tried to learn from it afterward. But I can't speak for her. I don't know who she is. I don't know what that is, but like, I'm just saying, like, that would have been, like, the process for me. Because whenever I record stories, I do so in, like, I'll do, like, three or four stories in one day. So I'll just sit down and I'll do that many stories. Because I have other projects that I work on also outside of just doing, like, YouTube.
Yeah.
So, like, I have, like, YouTube time dedicated to today. And then tomorrow I'm working on audiobooks. And tomorrow I'm working on indie games. And the next thing we're doing this. So, like, I would try to do, like, a condensed amount of stuff within a single day. So maybe she learned from it. And that would be one of those things also, like, on her would be, like, contacting my mod team to be like, hey, don't post those. Like,
yeah, right?
Because, like, yeah, remember that time we did those? Yeah, throw that out for now. We'll post something else. Post a short today.
Yeah, right? Like, I would do that because at least at that point, like, you're out however long it took you to read the story. But if it gets to that point, like, you either A, have a strike, or B, you pay a not insubstantial amount of money. Like, money. I would rather lose the time, even though I value my time more than anything else. But, like, I don't know. It seems like a decent trade-off to keep your channel alive. And
I mean, I'm the person who doesn't fuck around my channel. Like, I'm not gonna, like, I've had nightmares about, like, waking up and then finding out, like, one of those, like, Bitcoin miner things took over my channel. And then I'm like, oh, God, what am I going to do with, like, myself?
I mean, I imagine, like, at your level, that would be a genuine concern. Because, like, you got millions of subscribers and, like, yeah, man, I lose sleep over my 3,000.
Well, no, like, this is the thing about, like, you know, like, my channel is how I pay for my house.
Of course.
I can't. Yeah, like,
for sure.
Like, how do I pay my mortgage?
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, God, Tesla's stealing from me. I can't. What am I going to do?
Yeah, dude, like, I can't imagine. And, man, you say you sit down and, so, okay, this is actually where I was going to go next. So, you say you sit down and you record 3-4 stories at a time for, say, I'm trying to think of a story of mine that you did. Daughter's Drawings. It's a longer story. Let's use that as an example. Is that one, or I guess, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a way to word it. Like, how long does it take you to record a single story of average length, let's say?
Let me take a look. So Daughter's Drawings was, how did I do that one? I don't think I did.
My family has been stalked for the last 4 years.
Oh, wait. Okay.
Is your chair Marvel?
Yeah.
Fuck.
It's torn apart, dude. It's torn apart.
I have a disgusting collection.
It's 23 minutes.
23 minutes? Okay.
Oh, do you? Oh, dude. I'm going to send you photos of my, I have a theater in my house that it's just a room dedicated to, like, the crap I've got over my life. I have a this is not related to the questions or anything. I have a really big obsession with recreated movie props. Those are like my favorite things ever.
That's awesome.
I love the idea of things from fiction being remade into real mm-hmm. life. And I really love that. So I have those. I have a bunch of like celebrities I've met. They got their autographs throughout my life. And like, I always just had them like in places, like in my office or whatever. We moved to this house. I'd had the room that was like, this is like my band cave room. So all of my stuff is in there. I'll send you photos of it on Facebook after the
interview. Hell yeah, like, dude.
You'll see all the shit that I have. But yes, I have my marble chair with the Spider-Man eyes.
Oh, that's awesome. Dude, I like...
This is so old. It's got a hole in the bottom of it for me just sitting.
I have never walked by a Marvel product that I didn't want. And most of the time I get it. Like, I have a substantial amount of my income goes to comics and comic-related merchandise.
Oh my god, I'm a very big fan of Superman.
Hell yeah, dude.
So I do the say that I love comic books a lot. I'm a very big Disney adult, which I don't think I have a lot of. Well, I do actually. Like, on my desk, I actually have a lot of like Disney merchandise.
Oh, that's,
Walt Disney,
that's sick.
Stuff. And I keep. Disney owns Marvel. Mm-hmm. They have consistent like recreations of Marvel things in like at the parks, and every time I go I'm like, oh,
oh yeah, dude. I have a Mjolnir. I just got my Captain America shield back from my mother-in-law's house because it was over, we had stayed there for a while, and it's just been it they redid the room that we were staying in when we lived with them, and
yeah,
we had the shield up on the wall, and like they redid the room, but they redid the room around the shield. I just always forgot about it because I never had like reason to go back in the room, and I was like, wait, why is my shield still the main decoration in this room?
you'll like this. So I don't know if you saw last year at California Adventure Disneyland. They did a full production of Rogers the Musical that was in the Hawkeye show.
Oh yeah.
So last year, like, I told my wife about this, like, it was in the summer, we got news on, because I follow a whole bunch of stuff. I don't know if I can say that. Never mind, I'm not gonna say that. I'll tell you about that later.
Okay.
I found out from like some news sources that was like, oh, the Rogers the Musical is going away at the end of the summer. So I just told my wife, like, hey, we got to go see this before it leaves. This is a 30-minute musical at the theme park. We need to go see it before it leaves. So, like, we book immediately, like, book a tour, like, a one-day trip to go to Disneyland.
That's dedication.
We go to Disneyland.
Dude.
Yeah, we go to Disneyland and go see Rogers the Musical, which, if you haven't seen it, it's on, like, there's lots of recordings on YouTube. I think they have, like, some of the best recordings are, like, the very last performance they ever did, which I didn't go to the last performance, but I went to go see one of them. And it's a fantastic musical. Like, they did so much in the little bit of time they had. And
do they include the numbers that are, like, in the show? Like, the songs?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah. I could do this all day, where the Avengers fight Loki.
Yep.
It's just as cheesy, too.
That's awesome.
Like, everything is just as cheesy. But, like, there's, like, this amazing scene where it just kind of like brings you through World War II. And him going through World War II are these giant like setups of comic book covers.
Oh,
and as
so
Steve's
cool.
going through them, he like poses and the light comes on and like he's going through that action of that comic book cover. And then it moves off to the next one, like as Star Spangled Man with a Plan is
That's
playing.
Sick.
Like that musical number. It's really good.
Awesome.
I suggest you check it out.
Yeah, dude.
But I bought the Captain America shield after going to see that musical. So I'm like,
you have to.
This is such a good. Yeah it's
dude.
Such a good.
Yeah, Kimmy and I have gotten into Legos recently. And because, so like, I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the podcast. We puzzle, like, we're trying to get into it, like, competitively. Because we do puzzles like
really?
A motherfucker, dude. And, like,
that's
90%
cool.
of them, more than that. Like, we have, I think we have about probably 125, 145 puzzles, something like that. And most of them are comic book related. Like, a lot of them are,
cool.
like, collages of different covers and, you know, Marvel, DC, Image, all the major houses and shit. Mm-hmm. But recently we've gotten into Legos, and like they make all the hands from Marvel. It sounds weird, but like they have like Wolverine hands, claws. Really? And then the Infinity Gauntlet, and then the Nano Gauntlet from Endgame. And so we have like, and they're like, they're decent size too. Like,
yeah,
where's the camera? There it is. Like, they're, you know, like they could, you could fit an actual hand in it if it had that capability. Oh, that's cool. But yeah, dude, it's sick. We got Star-Lord's mask that we're going to do next.
Right. Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I can see like the way you move over that too. Also, I completely glanced over your question not talking about Disney.
Oh, dude, no. Like, it's totally fine, dude. Like, I can talk about, I can do this all day.
Yes!
I don't even remember what I asked, to be honest with you.
I don't remember what you asked. You asked me something, and then I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, how long would it take me? I think my editor works for a couple of different people. I think he says usually cuts about 10 minutes of mistakes out of my... out of my stuff. It's really, I take them all in one take usually, unless like, and then whenever I stumble, I'll just retake that line, and then continue on through it. I'll do a lot of also my recordings live on my Twitch. Mm-hmm. And the major reason I do that is because I get distracted really easily, and like I'll just suddenly start like, oh, going down some weird rabbit hole where I'm like, oh, how did I do that voice? And then, like, go back to one of my videos to, like, listen to the voice and then see a related video. Like, oh, Markiplier played me. like it's sort of, I start watching something and I get real distracted. But if I'm streaming it on Twitch, like, people have, like, buttons on the Twitch stream that's like, hey, you got distracted talking about something. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And I'll get back to doing something for work. So
that's awesome.
I'll do that. Yeah. There's full buttons for the audience to like, tell me like, hey,
I'm gonna have to check one of those streams out. Dude, that sounds, like, yeah, that sounds cool, man. Yeah, dude. I'm trying to do the audiobook for Daughter's Drawings, and
yeah,
like it's fun. I like doing it, but editing, so I love video editing. Like I would do that as a career if I could get my foot in that door. Like I genuinely enjoy it. I like editing videos and I like editing audio to a point, but
to a point,
dude,
there's a lot of tedium.
It really is, dude. And it's just like, I will see this, you know, cause I'll sit and record for like 3-4 hours. I'll get a couple chapters done. And then I look at this, like these gaps between like the waveform, and I'm just like, oh my god, I have to go through this. Like, this is going to be literally like 1,000 clicks before I have what I want, which is a weird way to measure it, but in my mind I'm like, I'm gonna be clicking that mouse so many times, and like, I'm just like, god damn, dude, I just don't have the effort or like the energy to do it all the time. So like, hats off to you, dude. Like
no, so like I was told before, I usually do all my editing. I did all of my editing for like 4 or 5 years, and then like I started getting other people to do it, and I kept like doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it, and like I could get done about a video in every 1 to 2 days when I was doing my own editing. And somebody also told me essentially like, if you didn't do your editing and you could record over that time, how many more videos could you get done? And I was like, oh god, I don't know. Like, I could do like so much more if I did that. And he was like, okay, cool. So like, break down like how much you make per video and like do up your time by hours and be like, how many hours did I do editing? And this is how much you're paying yourself to do that. He goes, okay.
Damn.
Now, like, are you overpaying yourself to do your editing? Like, yeah, I guess I am. Like, could you like break it down? You're like, cool, I'm spending like 70% of my money at that point paying myself to do the editing when I could pay an editor to do it at like,
damn, that is like a genuine pro tip. Like,
that's like, you know, like you're paying like an editor's price to do it if you hire an editor to do it. If you're paying yourself to do it with how much, you know, like, because like you are the brand, you are the voice, right, you are everything. So like, you're paying yourself way over the amount that you would pay an editor to do that amount of work. Not to mention, like, you're not an editor. You know what I'm saying? Like, the way that I would do my editing is like, I know what my voice looks like. I know my waveform looks like. I could cut things apart. I know when I make a mistake, I could do that. And then like, I ask my editor how he does it. He's like, oh, I put in this program and then it auto captions the entire thing. And then I copy the original text and I put it over here. And as you read through it, I can see whenever you make mistakes because the auto caption says there's a mistake, and then I just cut it.
What the fuck?
I was like, yeah, like, because like when I'm doing it, like I said, like I do a video in like 2 days, right? And he's like, no, I get it done in about 2 hours. Because it's just, yeah. The thing is, like, I'm not a professional when it comes to that. I know how to do voice work.
Yeah.
I don't know how to edit stuff like he does. And like, I'm paying like my, I'm overpaying myself to do this in 48 hours. When I pay him a rate to do it in 2 hours, you know, that's like, because it's just, crazy. That's his job. And like, his whole thing is like, that's why he works with so many people. Cause it's like, okay, cool. This is Spike's thing. Spike's thing's done. Send it back to him. This is Jake's thing. Jake's thing's done. Send it back to him. This is Kelsey's thing. Kelsey's thing. Send it back to Kelsey. Like, it's just like, he just goes through it. And that's like, that's what he knows how to do. Like, it's really one of those things of like, you know, you could learn to do it, but like, it's, you're doing a lot more of a service to yourself to get somebody who knows how to do it.
You know what's crazy? Like,
yeah,
I know how to do that. I've just never considered it. I have a transcription program like that I use for a different project that I'm working on. I never thought about using it for that. And dude, it fucking timestamps everything. My mind is genuinely blown right now, dude. I'm like, I'm stealing that dude's method. Like,
I mean, like, that's, it just makes, it makes a lot of sense. The only thing it's not going to do, of course, it's not going to show up gaps in the audio and things. I think that's what he says. At the end of the day, he really just listens to the audio three times. He listens to it for the first time to clean it up, listens to it again to see how it feels for the gaps, and listens to it the third time to make sure it's clean, and then he sends it away.
Yeah, that's another thing that I worry about, or not worry about, that just is always in the back of my mind, is the gaps between lines. Because obviously you can...
Well, you need to see how it feels.
Yeah, like, for sure.
Should it be a pause that long?
Yeah, it's just because, like, you got to know when to pause for dramatic effect, and, like, when not to, when it requires... Because your stuff in particular, like, with all the narrations I've been listening to for the past few weeks, excuse me, you have the best, like, because you get into it, like, you get intense about it, and, like, I like that, and, like, you have a good, I'm not trying to, like, you know, shower you with praise and shit, but, like, like, things I notice in your videos is where you will start going super fast to match, like, the... I guess the pacing of the story in a way, like not even the pacing of the story, but the pacing of a specific like scene within a story, which I don't see a lot of people do. And like that really, like, I feel like I've said like 1,000 times in the past 40 seconds, 1,001. But no, like, God damn it. Why now I'm like conscious of it. Fuck. But you do that and it matches the pacing of a particular scene, and it really amplifies the story. And I always like that about your narrations. And I don't know, really know where I was going with that, but it was like, my bad.
No,
it's something I've noticed in yours more than anything, is that the intensity actually matches what's happening in the scene. Whereas a lot of narrators who are all very good narrators, I'm not trying to take anything away from them, but there's more of just a kind of consistency throughout it, that, and consistent isn't bad, but the way you do it, I feel, adds a lot to the listening experience from a consumer point of view.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I always, like, that was one of the things about like the way that I tried to do things. When I was like, going back to like when I first got started, when I was in college, I listened a lot to radio shows. I liked 1930s, 40s detective radio shows, horror radio shows, things like that. And when I started the channel, and it continued well through till now, I want the channel to be more like a radio show than an audiobook. And I think being consistent and being clear and everything like that, it's really important to... for an audiobook to do something like that. I'm trying to get across every single word that the author says.
Yeah.
in a radio show, I always feel like more than getting across the words that the author's written, I'm trying to get across the emotion that the author is trying to convey. And that's what I try to put into my thing. I know, like, there's a lot of people who say they don't like that too. It's like, oh, I'm trying to sleep and it's too loud. And I'm like, I get that. Like, I don't want to, I know that, like, it takes away from some people's experiences, but I'd like to imagine it also adds into it for other people.
Yeah.
So,
this ain't your grandpa's creepypasta narration.
Yeah. But I want it to feel like there's more to it than just the base.
Yeah. Then you're just sitting in a chair reading words. Yeah. I get that for sure. You know, actually, if I could ask some advice for narrating, like, how do you handle, and I'm sure I've heard you do it 100 times in all these different stories, but I can't think of anything offhand. How do you do, like, a woman's voice or, like, a child's voice? Do you, or, yeah, I'll just leave it at that. Like, how do you, because I'm trying, in daughter's drawings, there's me, there's Kimmy, and then, you know, there's all these different characters, and I try to make them sound different enough, but, like, also I don't want to sound like a clown. So, like,
A woman's voice and a child's voice are almost pretty similar for what I do. Like, a woman's voice is just a falsetto.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just raising up my voice a little bit whenever I talk as a woman. I think what's most important about getting those voices is less, because, like, I'm not going to make my voice sound different than what it is. I'm not, like, one of those voice actors that could, like, all of a sudden I sound like an entirely different, like, person.
Yeah.
A lot of my voices are just small changes to the way that I speak, and changing, like, cadences for a woman or changing cadences for a child is really it. There's a certain thing I got through to one other person I was working with before when I was trying to, like, coach them through, like, a voice acting thing, was, like, doing voices, making voices is one thing, and then voice acting is, like, another thing. Is to say, like, when I do, like, the egg-shaped woman, right? The egg-shaped woman is just Raz from, like, Monsters, Inc. And that's just a voice. That's not, like, an actual character.
Right.
So, like, Raz is just, I'm just gonna go ahead and get this done for you. And it's just a silly voice because there's no actual, like, emotion behind it. Raz doesn't have certain things that you have to go through when you're developing a character. Which is to say, like, how would Raz sound if, like, with the way that I said before, for some characters, like, how would Raz sound if she, like, lost her parents? Which is not a certain thing that you would ever go through with that voice, because it's meant to be as, like, a joke thing.
Yeah.
But when you're going to an acting point, that's something you need to go for. Is, like, well, like, additionally, like, if I'm going for a small child, how would the child sound whenever, like, the child receives, like, a gift on their birthday? You know, all of a sudden, like, oh, there's a level of excitement that goes there. And there's a level where, oh, the child's going to talk faster because, like, I'm so excited and I don't really know how to convey that because, like, I'm not emotionally at that point. Like, those kind of things. Yeah. Like, that's what you want to get to when it comes down to characters. So when there's, like, a woman character, I really only have one woman. But, like, I can have an idea about how she responds whenever she's angry. She's a lot more concise when she says every single thing because she's trying to hammer in her point.
Okay.
And things like that. Like, those are ways to get it. But it's just a falsetto. So my voice is just a little bit higher. But really, I'm just trying to get across what I want to tell you. Like, that kind of thing. Okay. You know? Like,
all right. Good to know. Thank you.
That's what you want to do. And just get to, like, in your mind where you want to be.
Okay.
And, like, where you want to be with that character. Like, so I say, like, I only have, like, a few characters. Like, there's, like, the Jeff the Killer character. There's the Eric Riggins detective. There's my normal talking voice, who I use for, like, Jack Townsend. And then there's, like, girl.
Girl. So,
the girl.
Yeah. Okay.
I need to play for any girl character.
I appreciate the advice. Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah.
So we are actually 55 minutes in, 54 minutes in. That went by crazy quickly.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to quit at an hour strictly. I just want to talk a little bit more about comics, dude. I'm sorry. Like, are we talking about...
No, go for it. So, I love comics, dude. I want to write my own comics sometime. I've been talking to Vincent Venacava saying we wanted to write comic books at some point.
Yeah, dude.
We did,
actually.
The Creepypasta comic book before. Did you? What'd you write?
It's called
The
Visitor, and it only has one issue. And to be honest, I've tried getting in touch with the artist. I want to do it again, like, because now I can actually...
Yeah?
Because we did it kind of on a... we ran a Kickstarter and it was successful and I paid her. She's an incredible artist. I've not been able to get back in touch with her. It sucks. Like, I really want to. I'd love to do more. This is back in, this is almost 4 years ago now. But yeah, it's called The Visitor. I'm doing my first convention in October and I'm going to.
Oh, congrats. That's great.
Yeah, I'm going to have some copies of that there. But anyways, you mentioned that you are a big Superman fan. How did you get into Superman?
I've been a Superman since I was a kid. I love Superman stuff. I don't know. Superman is one of those characters. I don't know. This is just the unpopular opinion thing, but like a lot of people love the idea of like a normal person would not be good. But somebody else had like made a post, I think, that like really explained it, is like there's not someone who has to be thrust into a good situation because they're required to be. It just never appealed to me as much as somebody who chooses he's a good person because they can be, like they choose to be a good person at that point. And I think I always liked that about Superman, is like everybody's like, oh well, he's too good of a person, nobody would ever be that way. It's like, why? why wouldn't they be that way? Like, why wouldn't you just be a good person?
That
there was a line in the New Tick show that was also that way, where I forget the Superman equivalent they had, and they said like, you know, you're an alien, you're superpowered, why wouldn't you like take over us? It's like, because that's not what a good person would do.
Yeah,
it's like, that's just it, dude. Like, I just want to be a good person, why is that so bad? Like,
I will admit I've read a lot of Superman. I do like the character, but I have at times thought that he's just a little bit too perfect. And when I try to think of like kind of his inner turmoil, I suppose, or his complexity, I'll say, I am sometimes hard pressed to do so. But that's not to say that I don't like the character. I do. And a lot of people say that he's like overpowered, like OP or whatever, to quote the children. I like that about him, dude. Like, he's just a unstoppable fucking animal. And I have found, I should have said, like, my feelings on Superman have changed. I have found that what I like the most about the character of Superman is that, because I'm a Batman fan. I mean, I'm wearing a Batman shirt, obviously.
Yeah, I feel
is Superman knowing that he is unstoppable, essentially. I mean, you throw Doomsday at him, whatever.
Yeah.
Darkseid, you know. But is knowing that he is, on planet Earth, the strongest, the baddest motherfucker alive, basically. And still choosing, like you said, to be good. Just because that's who he is. And I like that. I have kind of turned... because I used to be, he's too perfect, he's not interesting, give me someone flawed like Batman. But my feelings have changed, and I very much like the dynamic between Batman and Superman. That is one of my favorite things in all of comics.
Yes. The World's Finest series. Yes,
it's one of the best comics out right now.
I agree, yes. I think the Batman and Superman dynamic is just so fun to play with.
Yeah, because they are like fundamentally different people. They have they have the same goal, but they go about it in such like the juxtaposition between their approaches to what they're trying to accomplish is fascinating. And like, it's a very interesting like character study of sort of the, not even the anti-hero, because it could kind of maybe be argued that Batman is an anti-hero. Because that motherfucker's kind of a villain, dude. Like,
yeah.
He just goes around town beating up mentally ill people. He's just a rich asshole who doesn't know how to mind his business, dude. Like, he's a rich guy who's like, oh, I know better than everybody else. Like,
it's kind of what he is. That's true, like, yeah. That's actually
like, Batman's a dickhead, dude. But, like, I like him. Like,
you read Kingdom Come, yeah?
Oh, of course, dude, yes.
Yeah, you read the person that Batman becomes is very much that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a rich asshole who needs to control everything because I'm the only person who understands what justice really means. Yeah,
for sure. Have you ever read Last Night on Earth?
I have not.
That's kind of the Have you read like the Court of Owls? And
yes,
so
yeah,
that
yeah,
run was from Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, trying to get Scott Snyder on here. He's on my bucket list. It will happen one day, damn it. That run was the New 52, and that is my, sorry, Scott, my second favorite run of a single character.
Really?
But so that run kind of led into Dark Knight's Metal, which, and then,
oh,
and then,
okay, yeah,
Dark
I know
Knight's
that one.
Death
yeah.
Metal. Last Knight on Earth is the canonical ending of that story, and it takes place like I don't even like 1,000 years in the future or something. And it's, I'll put it this way, like it's Batman going through a barren wasteland, like post-apocalyptic wasteland, with the Joker's animated head in a carrying case, and it's just like a buddy adventure.
What?
It's,
hang on, what is this called? I need to read this. That sounds cool as hell.
It's great, dude. I love it. It's phenomenal. Last Knight on Earth. Knight, obviously, like Dark Knight.
Yeah,
it's awesome. I think
that sounds cool as hell.
Yeah, it rules, dude. Like, and it's, especially if you pair it with like reading that New 52 run and then Dark Knight's Metal, Death Metal, and cap it with that, like the chronological ending to that story is sick.
I need to read that. I still have one of them for when the big Watchmen crossover that was, oh, was it Birthright? Was it?
Doomsday Clock?
Yeah, Doomsday Clock. Yeah. Before Birthright started up, I think is what it was. But I still need to read that one because I still have like the big omnibus of that,
yeah.
And I never got into like really what the New 52 was at the end of it, because I know that Doomsday Clock is supposed to like tie up what happened with the New 52.
Yeah, it was very hit or miss. I got into it
really.
Oh yeah, New 52. Yeah, because that was almost 15 years ago that started. Now, it was the second big revamping of DC's lineup, I guess you would say, because comics, dude, like once you get into the multiverse, it gets so muddled and you have so many different, like, that's Batman, but that's not the actual real Batman that you've been reading.
Yeah,
and, but they got this Batman over here who's very similar but different because of this, and like it's gets messy every once in a while. So you had Crisis on Infinite Earths, and that was the first big crossover that consolidated all these different timelines and shit, and that, which that's a classic, it rules. And then New 52 was the second big one, and then Rebirth.
I would say like Crisis on Infinite Earths, Infinite Crisis, they gave us a lot of different, the Infinite Crisis gave us like a lot of different multiverses, but I guess it never really rebooted
them. Well, the thing is, like, the concept of the multiverse was there and it was being utilized in the 80s, but it had gotten so expansive and there was no real through line to anything going on in DC. So Crisis on Infinite Earths, that took, you know, there's a Batman over here that's has been turned into a vampire and is running around murdering Dracula. And then there's a Batman over here who is, you know, doing this, and one over here doing this, and like all these different, like one who's a Green Lantern, and like Green Lantern rules, by the way, one of my favorites too. what Crisis on Infinite Earths did was it quite literally erased so many of those universes and left with the, I forget how many it was,
52.
No, not even.
After the Infinite Crisis.
Yeah, this was back in the 80s, yeah. Infinite Crisis then led into New 52.
Universal Constant,
Which they brought Jason Todd back by having Superboy Prime punch a hole in reality.
That was so fucking cool. I don't know. Superboy Prime is like one of my favorite.
He's awesome, dude.
Films. He's, yeah. Okay, so I wanted to bring this up. For one, have you ever heard of Graphic Audio?
Yeah,
so all the events, the DC events, they did those. That was one of the really big things that started me out as MCP. As because I fucking loved the way the Graphic Audio was putting together radio broadcasts. Like, they were just so well done.
Yeah.
Like, every single thing about them was so well done. The Foley, the characters that they cast, everybody was so good. And plus, they were like, these were ones about Superman. And that's why I was like, I'm going to listen to Superman stories. And that was one of those really big things that was like, dude, I really want to do something like that. And when I started doing Mr. Creepypasta stuff, was like, I wanted it to be like graphic audio. Yeah. And it was really cool because, like, I think like 5 years ago, Graphic Audio, or one of the actors from Graphic Audio, launched their podcast, and they reached out to me and they were like, "Hey, did you want to do promotions for it?" And I was like, "Yes, anything with Graphic Audio." So I was doing promotions for one of their little horror podcasts. So cool. I think it was really cool. another thing, Judd Winnick was the one who wrote Under the Red Hood, who brought Jason Todd. Well, I guess, yeah, brought back Jason Todd. I met him at the weirdest time. So, when I left my high, I never actually had like real actor training at all until like started doing this. When I was in high school, I was a part of like the speech team.
Okay.
And I was on the speech team. I was really like good friends with like my teachers and stuff. So after I did YouTube, my teacher started messaging me like, "Hey, did you want to come back to the high school and like talk to kids? Because kids are really like interested in like doing YouTube and stuff as a career. Do you want to talk about doing that?" And I was like, "Yeah, cool. Sounds good to me." So I'll come back every year and do that. And then like the school eventually, like, because my high schools are really cool, they were like, "Hey, we want to try to do a comic book convention at the high school."
Oh, that's awesome.
That's like put together by the librarians of the high school, who are really nice ladies and stuff. So I was helping them organize that, and then also appearing as like a guest at their comic book convention. But in 2020, clearly they couldn't do that anymore. So I was running all of their, they basically did it as a YouTube stream, and I was running all of their technology because,
you know, YouTube
librarians are like, yeah, well, the librarians are like in their 60s, 70s. Like, they don't know how to do this. And I was like, "Look, if you want to do it, I have all this stuff set up already. Just feed them to me, and then I will run the entire thing for you. It's no big deal." And they're like, yeah, cool. So I just ran all their stuff as like a guy in the chair. And one of the guests who calls in was a writer for Under the Red Hood. Because he wasn't there for Under the Red Hood. He's doing like this children's, I don't know if it's a comic book. I think it's like a young adult novel or something like that. And that's what they brought him in for, is like talking about that.
That's awesome.
So I'm just here, like silent inside of like this Skype call as like they're interviewing him for it. And I'm just like, why does his name sound familiar? I feel like I've seen him before. So like, I'm like looking these things up, and like, I see like Under the Red. Wait, what? This guy is the reason why Jason Todd came back. And like, so I log into my YouTube and like go onto the live stream that's there and just start asking questions inside of the chat, because I'm like, "Do you want to talk about Batman?" And it was like, "Yeah, we can talk about Batman."
That rules, like, dude.
So I'm like, "How did you get DC to agree to bring back Jason Todd? How did you do these things?" Because like, I mean, this is like questions I don't think like I ever get to ask. Yeah. Like, because like, you know, you brought back a character who was dead. And I think you were like one of like the first ones to do it within like the modern age of comics. So like, how did you convince them to just bring back a dead character? Did you have to go through like a lot of red tape, or like, what did you do? He's like, "Actually, no." Like, so I wrote up the script and I was like, "Who could I use?" So I was like, "Jason Todd might be good." So because he was a character who existed, nobody had seen him since like the Silver Age at that point. Age at that point. So he just wrote it into a script. He presented it to DC, and they just gave it a thumbs up. So they really did not care. It's just like, yeah, cool. Sounds good to me. I think like for a good while afterward, technically did own the rights to Jason Todd as the Red Hood until DC was like bought him out.
Yeah.
Cause they're just like, yeah, oh, we want to use it for another series on its own. So here's like a paycheck, and then we're going to take it.
That's
He's just
crazy.
Like, yeah, cool, whatever. Cause I don't have anything else to put into it. So
that's awesome. I love what he did with Red Hood. Under the Red Hood is, there's such a good animated DC animated film for it, and
yes,
Jensen
yes.
Ackles plays.
Jensen Ackles did a great job.
Who also does a great Batman too. He was.
What do you see? He played Batman.
I want to say The Long Halloween parts 1 and 2.
Really? Yeah. I didn't see those.
Jensen Ackles fucking rules, dude. He's awesome. But yeah, man, Jason Todd has become one of my favorite. He's top 5 for me, I'd say.
That was this thing. Even like I don't know if you played, I'm assuming you did. You played all the Rocksteady games for Batman Arkham 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, I'm playing it again
was
right
saying
now.
Like, oh, what he was saying when that game, the third one, was made. Spoiler, it's the Red Hood. They had to bring him in.
Oh, really?
To ask about accuracy for the Red Hood. So he was
interesting. Like, he was really That's cool. awesome. Yeah. Yeah, I liked the review. I mean, like, I saw it coming a mile away, and I think anybody who is somewhat knowledgeable on Batman lore knew it was coming. But like, I liked it. I thought it was a good. The only thing I think that would have made it better is if they would have at least mentioned him in previous games, which I think that's a valid, you know, thing. But like, for what they did, I thought they handled it well. And I like his DLC too. You actually get to play as Red Hood.
I didn't get to try it out.
It's pretty fun.
I never played
it's
any
short.
Of the DLCs for the last one.
It's short.
Oh, is it?
But it's fun going around. He has his own gadgets and shit. It's cool. But yo, we are actually at well over an hour at this point, so we're gonna have to do this again because I feel like there is far more ground.
I'll talk to you about comic books till the cows come home.
Hell yeah. We'll just dedicate the next time we do this to just comics start to finish, dude. Mr. Creepy.
Can I say one thing? Please. If anybody likes my stuff, I'm going to plug one thing.
Oh, no, I was
going to
say, dude, please tell people where they can see you. Anything you want to plug, promote, please.
Yeah, I have. So me and my friend General Drowned are just started getting into the world of independent horror video games. We've completed our first independent horror game, which we might expand upon later on. But as it is right now, we completed it for the Godot Wild Jam. And it's available for anybody to try out, download for free on mrcreepypasta.itch.io. It's called Midnight Myths, where you play as a park ranger who is observing creatures in the wild, as well as doing your park duties to keep the place clean.
That sounds awesome, dude.
Yeah.
I will definitely be checking that out. And I hate to do this. When we're done, I may or may not edit this out. When I hit stop recording, don't exit out right away. It takes like 10
don't
seconds.
Exit out.
Yeah. So sorry, gotcha. I should have told you that at the top, and now the ending is just ruined. So there's that. But thank you, Spike. I really do appreciate your time, man, and I will talk to you soon.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much for having me on.
Not a problem. Later.